times of change and market volatility, having sound financial advice is critical. Our guest today is Steve King, VP at WealthQuest. Steve is going to share with us how he uses a holistic approach to help clients meet their goals by advocating for their complete financial health. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. So, Steve, how is WealthQuest innovative?
You know, WealthQuest, from its very beginning, has been trying to bring this industry to a new standard. You know, if you think back to images of stockbrokers, you kind of get this image of like a Gordon Gecko, mm-hmm. you know, of a buy kind of sleazebag. And the financial advice industry has been struggling to shake that for a long time. And, you know, the current industry is better than it used to be. But we think at WealthQuest that really we can be a whole lot better. And, you know, that's, you know, if you look at the innovation at WealthQuest, it's primarily around improving the model and improving the experience for clients, and ultimately improving the results that that they experience.
Awesome. So what's your personal career story? How did you get started, and then how did you end up at WealthQuest?
So it, you know, now it goes back a few years, but I was, you know, 25 years old and I didn't know much. I knew I needed to get out of corporate America, you know, looking at, you know, all the different job levels that were, you know, 25 different job levels at corporate America. And I knew I wanted to work directly with people. And I found myself working at a local broker-dealer insurance agency. And I was fortunate enough to meet a mentor and business partner by the name of Joe Richmond. And I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Joe. You know, he really, you know, he taught me everything I know about building relationships and building trust. He's just a wonderful man. And we were trying to break our clients free of a broker dealer and a relationship with this insurance company that was growing less and less advantageous for the clients. And by good fortune, I happened to be working late one night. This is 2006. I'm working in, you know, Blue Ash, Ohio, and I'm going out through the lobby, heading to my car. And I bump into someone. His name is Wade Daniel. He's there scouting for office space for a new company he's starting. And Wade and I had met a few years earlier at an industry function, and we got to talking. And the timing could just not have been better. He was looking for capacity and additional resources. He had a great idea about, again, how to push the financial industry forward. And, you know, in 2007, you know, Joe Richmond and I moved our entire book of business over to WealthQuest, and we became employees number 5 and 6 at WealthQuest. And I've been there ever since. Now we sit atop serving 1,200 families, managing a little over $1 billion in client assets, and employing 30 people.
Awesome. Yeah, and you're located in Sharonville there, up on eBusiness Way.
We are.
As a Sharonville resident, it's great to have another Sharonville business on the show. And that's a pretty neat development up there, where they've added some really, you know, top class office space to that area.
I know, and there's some more space to go. I think Sharonville is looking to expand. So yeah, it's a great spot. We just signed a new 10-year lease. We are doubling our footprint in our Sharonville office. So we are here to stay.
That's awesome news. Yeah. So what is the job of a financial advisor, in your opinion?
A financial advisor is part coach, part educator, and part psychologist, in my opinion. You know, I think, again, dropping that image of Gordon Gecko and a stockbroker in the distant past, you know, really true financial advisors are leaders for their clients And that's based and grounded in coaching and education and a little bit of psychology.
So how do you use those skills to, I know you focus, you know, you talk a lot in our conversations about helping people through periods of change. You know, it's not just about what return their portfolios get in any particular quarter. So how do you kind of leverage those talents to do that?
It's a good question. I practice a lot of listening. I think asking questions and listening really helps me uncover what's really important to a family. Somewhere underneath every, you know, stressed client and every stressful money situation, there's a real concern and a real nugget of truth that if I can help uncover and help really understand, I can really give, you know, better coaching advice and be a better financial advisor. You know, I guess a case in point, this period of market volatility we've been living through, I've had to coach a number of client families through an impulse to sell all of their investments. You know, there's been tremendous volatility and fear. And even long-term clients, very intelligent people who have been through recessions in the past and have been investors for, you know, some cases, you know, 30 plus years, they're calling me and they're expressing concerns about continuing to be a long-term investor. And, you know, what's happening in their minds to lead this, very knowledgeable and intelligent person to potentially be making a ruinous decision is, it's complicated. And I guess through experience and through the help of, you know, Joe Richmond and others, I've learned how to, you know, ask the right questions and really help uncover, you know, where those pain points really are and help, I guess, digest what's really salient in this decision. Is this truly a situation, Sam, where this client has lost a job and they need to, you know, rally their resources? Or is this really a perceived risk that perhaps if we were to frame it a different way, might not lead to panic selling? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because, like, I've met so many people that recently, friends of mine that you would think might be panicking. But they're seeing opportunity. You know, a friend of mine lost his job out of nowhere. You know, he has wife and kids and all this. He's the sole breadwinner. And, you know, he's out on the street, decided I'm going to start my own business. And he's looking and he's like, you know, my mortgage payments have been forgiven for 6 months. My car payments forgiven for 6 months. I've got unemployment that's like crazy high levels or, you know, higher level of compensation than normal right now. It's all because of this craziness. He's like, this is a fantastic opportunity to get fired. Right. So,
it's
I mean,
perfect example, right? Yeah. Of someone who has chosen to frame the same circumstance, you know, I've lost my job, with a completely different approach. You know, he has actually taken this and turned it into an exciting new opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, for every you know, five clients who call me with concerns about selling, I might have one client who actually calls with opportunity to say, hey, maybe we should be buying. The market's down 37% in the last 3 weeks. You think we should be buying? So, yes, it's interesting when you're invited as a financial advisor into so many different lives. You have the privilege of, I guess, sitting in, you know, intimate relationship with a lot of different people. And so you do get the luxury of learning about people. They're fascinating to me, and helping people to, you know, to tackle something that they may have been tackling now just for the first time in their life, but I may have helped many, many, many people through a similar challenge. And so it gives me a chance to, you know, lend a little bit of wisdom that I have gained through, coaching others.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you think about somebody who's really stressed out or depressed or something, that if they were to go to an actual psychologist, well, that person doesn't have any financial background. So they don't really know whether or not to tell them you have nothing actually to worry about or not, right? I mean, they'll just assume that they should be worried.
That's a really good point, right?
Whereas, if you talk to it's just like anything. If you talk to your financial advisor, your lawyer, your CPA, whoever it is that advising you on some matter, and they're like, look, don't worry about it, then you know what I mean? Sometimes mm-hmm. you can kind of head that off, maybe some of that worry off. Now, are you from Cincinnati originally? Is that right?
I have been here longer than anywhere else in my life, Sam. I moved here in high school. Okay. So, that's more years than I care to count anymore. But I consider myself a Cincinnati native now.
And what high school did you go to?
I'm a Sycamore High School grad.
Okay.
Right here in Montgomery, Ohio.
Nice. So I guess just back to WealthQuest and portfolio management. I mean, so maybe just we can talk a little bit about, not everybody may be familiar with some of the concepts around there. So you all are fiduciaries, and I know that was not a term I knew until later in life. So what does that mean, and why is that a good thing as opposed to other models?
Yeah, fiduciary is a buzzword in our industry now, and I suppose it's been on the rise for some time. But, essentially, it means that, at WealthQuest, all advisors and employees are acting in your best interest and with your best interest at heart. That it's as if we are trustees for your affairs. It's a legal and enforceable standard that puts a great deal of onus on our industry and our just WealthQuest itself to really hire great people who care for and truly want the best for our clients, because it is the gold standard in care. You compare that with let's say the broker dealer where I used to work. We had an obligation to represent investments that were suitable for clients' portfolios, partially because there was an internal bias inside the company, right? The company built their own products, and so their representatives were incentivized to sell company products, and that mm-hmm. is not a fiduciary standard. There can be conflicts of interest there. It's one of the reasons that Joe and I were so excited about partnering with WealthQuest and really trying to elevate the whole industry. We think honestly that the whole industry should be fiduciaries. I think it's akin to a Hippocratic oath, mm-hmm. right? A doctor should be an advocate for your health, regardless of what hospital or what company he works for or she works for. I think the same thing should be true of all financial advisors. I think it's, a part of why we get so passionate about, taking wealth management to the next level, because the fiduciary standard, I think, is kind of the beginning. Yeah, that's where you start. And then you start to add things like tax preparation, and tax advice. You fold that into the investment advice that most people associate with financial advisors. And then you fold in retirement planning advice into that same team of people. And then you fold in risk management advice, and then you fold in estate planning recommendations. You put all of that advice into one package, and that's, we think, again, taking the industry to a new standard where that should be what, because most families, and in my opinion, most families need that kind of coordinated advice, because it's difficult to do it yourself. And to do that in one stop shop fashion and to bring additional efficiency, that's what we're all about at WealthQuest.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know that when I first probably, in my early 30s, started taking money more seriously or trying to get a plan together. It was probably around the time I was having kids and all this, and sort of found out about that difference in terms of that expectation industry. It's like, wait a minute, are you telling me that they don't have to have my best interests at heart? Like, what is, that's crazy, you know, that, you know, and I think, as you said, there are certain like standards, you know, they can't recommend something they know is like a terrible choice for you, maybe. Right.
Right.
Or whatever. But they also can say, well, I'm going to choose, you know, this fund over that fund because I get, they personally get a higher commission. And that's the only actual real reason, right? Potentially.
Yes.
And yeah, I mean, it seems like across the board, that should be a standard, but just kind of, I think, I don't know if everybody really realizes that, or a lot of people, you know?
Oh, I think that is absolutely the case. There's a lot of confusion. They, you know, most people think an advisor is an advisor is an advisor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's only the educated, you know, client who, like yourself, begins to realize that there are conflicts of interest all over the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And those conflicts of interest should be snuffed out. They really continue to give the industry, you know, black eyes. You know, the Wells Fargo scandal from a few years ago, you know, it's just the latest example of, you know, when you incentivize representatives of an institution, they will react to those incentives and not to their clients' best interest.
Yeah. So you mentioned sort of trends in the industry, and so I'm curious. There's been a lot of kind of interesting technological innovations out there recently in the financial services or fintech industry. So I'm curious on your thoughts on a couple of them, and why perhaps working with a real, you know, fiduciary advisors might be a better choice in your opinion. So for instance, if you look at Robinhood, is mm-hmm. one we've talked about, you know, it's an app that allows free trading. It's very popular with millennials. They have, you know, 32 million subscribers or something, supposedly, or users, I guess they would call them. So obviously, I mean, that's just pretty much just a, like using any other brokerage, except it's free, right? And it's on your phone.
Right.
But I guess, are there other aspects of that you think, I mean, I guess what's good and what's bad about that?
We have been students of this trend in fintech, you know, from the very beginning. We think, you know, technology is a good part of why WealthQuest has been successful, right? We've been fortunate enough to leverage technology and scale up and be able to bring services that previously could only be delivered to extremely wealthy families. We've been able to bring that down market. That's really, you know, kind of the wealth management for everyone is what we are seeking, you know, in our terms of our mission at WealthQuest. And so Robinhood and Acorn and Betterment, you know, the ability to leverage technology to deliver real advice at scale is fascinating. And there have been only really a handful of concepts that have been able to stick around for the last 10 years. You know, Robinhood is one end of the spectrum, right? We're encouraging people to set up financial accounts, encouraging them to trade, lowering barriers to entry, making it really easy to buy small fractional shares for $50, $100, and you too can own your future, you know, mm-hmm. Robinhood. I think that is just fantastic on the levels of introduction and awareness and bringing, you know, empowerment. But every time you bring empowerment to, you know, smaller and smaller increments, lower prices, and the transaction costs are now zero, you certainly invite abuse. And, you know, the last 3 months, I know I personally have read a number of articles about Robinhood being the new DraftKings. You know, essentially, you have a lot of consumers out there basically gambling. And you know, potentially gambling with their life savings. I think that's reckless. I think there's potential for Robinhood to do great harm. Hmm. And in fact, in moments of volatility, we've actually seen Robinhood freeze up and break down.
Yeah.
Right? There's so much trading, they've actually crashed. That to me is not a sign of great health. I think there's a lot to learn for fintech in general. And some have learned faster than others. I think Robinhood's kind of early in their maturation. Some of the other robo platforms, it's interesting, Sam. You're seeing what they began as a if you build it, they will come model, Field of Dreams, right? Mm-hmm. If we build a robo advice platform that's very inexpensive, you know, millennials and others will sign up by the millions. And they have learned that that is actually not the case. And they have all drifted back to human advice models.
Yeah.
There's still an element of financial complexity and a need to trust another real person, and not quite a trust of the computers yet. That, you know, tells me that we're really in a space that's going to demand a healthy partnership with technology and people. And that's really where WealthQuest has come down. You know, we kissed a lot of frogs, Sam, in the early stages of fintech development, and launched several products that ended up, you know, really flopping, but have settled on, again, bringing wealth management to everyone, meaning that you can get coordinated financial advice for an investment account as little as $5,000. You know, and that is our core mission. And so, you know, we think technology is the only way we're able to do that. And so we're very thankful that, you know, fintech is driving down costs and driving up scalability.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I just wanted to comment on some of the ones you mentioned, you know, and with Robinhood, for instance, it's opened up a lot of folks to options investing that would otherwise never heard of options investing. And I've read some horror stories of people, for instance, you know, that didn't understand the implications of selling an option, for instance, and that they might get assigned, right? And then all of a sudden, they have a couple thousand shares to buy, you know, and it's like, I don't have the money for that. Oh, well, now you're in real trouble, right?
Right.
And it's interesting, too, with the robo-advisors, you know, if you look at them, most of them are pretty cheap, but it's not hard to figure out what funds they have. So why even pay them anything? Why pay them, you know, 0.15% or whatever the, you know, kind of very bargain basement ones? If I can just go look at the 10 funds they have and just go buy those myself, you know, I don't need them. What are they really adding other than just convenience, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, with all of those, once there is always the option to, well, go ahead and upgrade to our 1.5% plan, and then you get a person, you know, and so it is interesting. And I think, you know, the other thing that I kind of think about is like when there's so many platforms blossoming up everywhere, it's sort of like social media networks. I mean, there's 50 of them, you go get an account on all of them. So if you do that with your assets, and then your assets are just everywhere, well, how can you get one view of how you're doing or what you even have?
Mm-hmm.
And I had that a problem a bit before I sort of started kind of condensing. I mean, I closed out a lot of accounts, you know, just to try to condense, because I was like, I don't know what the total is, you know, for instance. So that's really interesting. What you mentioned, some of the tech tools that you're leveraging. So talk a little bit about how you all have employed technology and just kind of, I mean, what's available to the different, you know, spectrums of customers that you can provide?
So most of the technology we employ is off the shelf technology, meaning that, you know, we have back office software that, you know, we purchase from vendors and then internally tweak to make it fit our business. That technology has all moved to cloud-based service models, meaning that, you know, what used to be run on our server there at the office only to our local area network now can be run from our computers at home. You know, mm-hmm. We have 30 employees working from home exclusively. And we have one person going into, you know, process the mail every day. Thank heavens that we have made those types of investments several years ago, so that, you know, again, we can operate our business, you know, from anywhere. Yeah, clients can get in touch with me through the normal channels. Our investment team can supervise and research from their homes and trade client portfolios our financial planning team, even our tax prep team is working remotely. You know, they're preparing 850 tax returns for a July 15th deadline. It's a wonder, and it's, you know, a testament to, you know, really the great technology vendors that we've partnered with. In terms of the customer experience, we have recently unveiled a client portal. You know, everybody says they got a portal, but you know, when we wanted to, you know, unveil a client interface, we wanted to make this client interface, you know, work with all the other vendors that we have been, you know, working with. So, you know, it's got to be able to integrate with the custodians. It has to be able to integrate with clients' online financial plan. It has to be able to integrate with secure methods of transferring documents for tax returns. So we think, you know, this is just another step in pushing the industry forward, that having, you know, an app and a portal that allows good communication and good integration across all the different departments here at WealthQuest is what is going to make, you know, clients, you know, continue to choose WealthQuest when they're thinking about their wealth management, right? The all under one roof is our motto. Mm-hmm. And as you were just describing, having your accounts spread all over is the opposite of that. You know, we want clients to have their fingers on the pulse of not only where their money is, but what it really means, so that they can find, you know, clarity where there was confusion and confidence where there might have been fear.
Gotcha. Interesting. And I've seen a lot of the videos and stuff on your website you've been doing from a marketing standpoint. And I know you're also doing some thought leadership on social media. I'm curious, you know, in your space and from a regulatory standpoint, I mean, what are some rules that you sort of face when it comes to putting your message out there that are unique compared to, say, what, you know, what a other consulting company or the services company might face?
Well, you can imagine when we are a fiduciary and we are regulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission, you know, they have a very strict set of marketing guidelines, you know, starting with, are you telling the truth? Hmm. You would expect that to be the case of all financial advisors, and the SEC wants to make sure they hold all financial advisors to that standard. And so, you will very rarely see financial companies advertising things that are, you know, related to rates of return. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing, because no one can predict the future, and no one should promise rates of return. As a result, it forces marketing activity to exist in a space that is somewhat narrower than, you know, most other industries. And you can't make any statement that you cannot base on fact. And again, that seems like a pretty good motto and a pretty good standard for your financial firms out there. So we are not begrudging the SEC those guidelines at all. But it also means we're not permitted to reference client testimonials. You know, that's considered to be hearsay. And so even though, you know, we have many, many very happy clients who would be happy to write a testimonial, which we would love to share with our online community, it violates our marketing rules. And so, you know, the personal referral, you know, is completely unregulated by the Securities and Exchange Commission. So personal referrals continue to be the lifeblood of, you know, the financial services and wealth management industry. It's continues to be how the single largest contributor to our growth has been happy clients recommending their family and friends to someone they trust.
Huh. That's fascinating, really. I don't think I realized that you couldn't put, I may have heard that before, but you know, the testimonial aspect.
I know.
Just because it seems like, I don't know, it seems like that would be key, you know?
Well, sure.
But as you said, it's, and I guess that kind of also belies a little bit if you see any kind of financial services or any kind of financial anything out there that people are saying, I used this and made doubled my money in 6 weeks. It's a scam. It's not completely on the up and up, right? Because you do see that among, you know, perhaps among other tools. Though I guess I will say I've never seen that claim made by some of the, like the robo-advisor stuff too, you know, and other of those web tools. So I suppose they have that same sort of regulation, or at least some of it. What about kind of in that thought leadership space?
Yeah.
So I guess, is that blog posts you're posting or videos you're making, or and kind of what do you, how's that gone, I guess? And what,
well, we are finding that even among our local competitors, they are gravitating to the all under one roof model. We have seen as an example, I guess local and national competition adding in tax prep services. Tax prep services has been, you know, really one of our key competitive advantages. And again, we are actually thrilled that the industry is starting to wake up, that we need to bring these services together. If we are to be true financial advisors and leaders, we need to be able to help coordinate all aspects of a client's financial life. Well, when we are the next evolution in being a financial leader is in the relationship with money, right? In the nuances and in the emotional side of money. Most of the financial wizardry of financial planning and retirement planning is math-based. It's actually pretty easy, and software and computers are doing that math for us. And so it gives us more time and more capacity to become the educators and the psychologists that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. And the social media work that we're doing involves, you know, weekly videos and weekly blogs and a weekly podcast. It's been a tremendous passion of our president, James Lenhoff. He actually wrote a book called Living a Rich Life that it is based around, you know, taking sum total of the life experience that he's gained through working with hundreds and hundreds of families. He distilled that into Living a Rich Life and is now helping to break that down into, you know, weekly podcasts of how to really reframe the way you think about money. You know, one of my favorite episodes was teaching kids about money. And you know, you think back about how your family taught you about money. And there's so much that's instilled in you from your early years. Right or wrong, you have a lot, you bring a lot to the table based on what your parents taught you. And if you could do it all over again, you know, would you do it differently? And if you could do it with the benefit of a little bit of hindsight and maybe a little bit of coaching, would you do it a little differently? We think that there's a lot to learn about teaching kids about money. Even adult children can be taught lessons about how to make money, make better money decisions. One of my favorite examples is I have three children, and we started to use an app that would give them some funds, give them an opportunity to spend those funds at their discretion, and get a chance to learn through failure. You know, as a parent, that that's a plastic piece of garbage and that's a waste of their money. Mm-hmm. They want it so bad, and they're tugging on your pant leg. They want it so bad. Well, let them buy it and let them learn that it's a plastic piece of garbage. And then they'll learn the next time. Oh, and they make those decisions and those failures so much sooner in life, so that they're not making those failures and learning those decisions, learning those life lessons, you know, when there's real money on the line. I did this little experiment with my three kids, and, you know, my oldest, he spends every nickel he's got. My daughter buys candy with every nickel she's got. Now, this is a few years ago, but when they were a little younger, my youngest, he saves every nickel he's got. And I say, Thomas, why are you saving all this money? He goes, well, Dad, how much money do I need to have in here so that it pays me $25 a month? I said, well, that's an interesting question, Thomas. Well, you need to have about $3,000 because, you know, the bank of Dad pays 10% interest. And so if I'm paying 10% interest on $3,000, you're going to get $25 a month. He goes, okay. I said, well, put all my money in savings until I have $3,000. I said, Thomas, why do you want $3,000? He goes, well, that way I can buy the Fortnite Battle Pass every month.
Without losing any money.
Without losing any money. So brilliant. It's given us all a wonderful chance to talk about these, aspects of, you know, the different ways that the siblings are approaching money. And it's allowed the older two to learn something from Thomas and Thomas to learn something from the older two. And so it's been a very healthy conversation. So that is just one example, Sam, of the Rich Life podcast and some of this thought leadership. We think that you know, we're building a following and we're building a group of interested prospects, right? People who might be interested in WealthQuest services someday, that when something happens in their life, you know, they have a job transition, they lose a loved one, they are faced with retirement, they are faced with a kid who is reckless with money, maybe they will Google something, maybe they'll remember WealthQuest and they'll go, hey, maybe I should talk to these folks because they clearly have been trying to figure out this money thing, you know, for a long time. And we can, you know, hopefully bring some wisdom to the table.
Yeah. And I think that's a great idea. Like just, you know, that's one of the big values of a podcast, right? Is to be able to put this sort of education and helpful messaging and thought leadership out there. And I have listened to that podcast and it's a great show. And it's called the Rich Life Podcast. If you search for it, so if you search for Rich Life Podcast, it's the Rich Life Podcast with James Lenhoff, which is Lenhoff. So if you see it out there on iTunes or Stitcher, that's how you can find it there. And it's so interesting. I think you're right that, you know, my wife and I have talked about this a lot because she historically has worked with a lot of disadvantaged students. And the, you know, if you read about, I mean, obviously there's books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's books about Cycle of Poverty or what is it? Ruby, can't remember her name. She knows the name, but, you know, an mm-hmm. author wrote a book about that, you know, sort of generational poverty and such. And yeah. And the lack of understanding about money and the preconceptions about it can, I think, really negatively detract and or subtract from the success or stability you have later in life. You know, like for instance, I mean, this is, you know, an example from my family. Because of the Great Depression, of course, my grandparents did not trust the stock market, mm-hmm. never really owned stock. Instead, they had, you know, 300 grand or something like that, but probably when they died or before they went into assisted living in savings bonds. Everything was in, you know, double E savings bonds. And it's like, wow, that's all you did? Because, I mean, what kind of return did that get the last 20 years of the life, right? Mm-hmm. Minimal. Whereas I think my wife's grandparents were less afraid of the stock market and basically probably put the same amount of money in for the same amount of time and obviously did far, far, far better. You know, probably, I don't know how much more, but definitely a lot better. And, you know, whereas you look at nowadays with kids, like my son who's 13, you know, he's got a Chime account, which is one of these online virtual banks. Mm-hmm. He's got a debit card through that. I pay him everything for mowing the lawn through Venmo. And now he really wants to start trading stocks, you know? I mean, it's like there's so much like technology and power. And of course, I'm like, I don't even know if you're allowed to trade stocks, you know, so hold up. Like, I need to look into that. But, you know, if I give them $100 and get them set up with a Robinhood account, I mean, go for it, right?
Right. He's going to learn some of those failures and yeah. and be wiser for it.
It'd yeah, he'll lose enough. It and he'll lose it in 3 weeks and then or he'll turn it into, you know, 500 grand or something. Who knows, right? he's definitely the one of my three kids that's the most sort of financially interested in stuff like that. And it's just, I don't know, it's encouraging, I think, in a way that it's that democratization that mm-hmm. so many different technology tools do. Or sort of creates, again, where anyone can, I mean, even just opening a bank account, for instance, right? Not everybody has a bank account.
Right.
And I was reading, you know, there's been talk of, for instance, the post office getting into the banking business because it would help so many lower income individuals actually open a bank account.
There would be a branch in their neighborhood, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Where maybe there is no other bank or there's only a payday loan type place, right?
Right, right.
Because obviously, you know, it's going to be a better deal from the post office. And so just all that opening up of tools is important, I think. And I guess maybe another question, we talked a little bit about the downturn and how that's affected your clients. What do you think what's a piece of advice that's just generally true across any difficult time, economic time, such as we're having now?
It certainly has been, you know, one of the most volatile time periods, I mean, that I can remember. Mm-hmm. You know, the speed and the severity of the down and now the up, it seems as though it has been accelerated, right? And there are a lot of contributing factors to that, not least of which is this 24-hour news cycle. You know, it seems that we're all, you know, glued to, you know, the latest COVID-19 therapy or the latest outbreak or, you know, the latest move in Apple stock. So certainly volatility is extremely high, especially over the last few months. It has been natural to reassess your financial situation. Everybody has done it. Everybody has had to think about whether their furlough was going to be a layoff or whether their job was in jeopardy and what that would mean. I think generally reassessing those things, especially as you look out into the future. The future is, you know, unknown, but perhaps it is maybe a little more unknown over the next 12 to 18 months. You know, as you consider the reopening of the economy and the continued path of the virus and the election, all of those things contribute to anxiety and perhaps paralysis. But having that emergency fund, mm-hmm. you know, it's old advice and it's everywhere. You know, if you Google, you know, what you should have that emergency fund. If you don't have an emergency fund, now's not a bad time to think about raising one. You know, if you have to trim something from somewhere to put some of that money aside, you know, the stock market has come roaring back from the brink, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not a bad time to think about you know, making sure you have enough, you know, bonds and cash and things that can help you weather a storm. Now, that said, a diversified portfolio of equities and mutual funds and exchange traded funds is probably still the best way to build wealth over time. You know, one of the legacies of this cycle has been even lower interest rates. Mm-hmm. Interest rates had been coming off the mat, and now they are flat on their back again. And with, you know, the influx of additional treasuries and the additional lending coming through the Fed, it is likely that interest rates are going to remain low for the foreseeable future and maybe even remain extremely low. And so it punishes your savers like your grandparents, Sam. Savers who have money in bonds and savings bonds will earn fairly modest, if not dismal, returns over the longer period of time. And that By that, I mean several years. And so you look around and we are coming to the conclusion that, you know, investors at all walks of life are going to probably have to own some level of equities or stocks in very broadly diversified portfolios, and hold them through the cycle, right? Hold them in the good times and hold them in the bad times. Because over time, you know, much like your wife's family, you know, the reward for owning a risky asset is worth it, because you can outpace inflation, yeah. Right? And you can actually build wealth over time.
Yeah, absolutely. That's always sound advice, I think, not to panic and always have kind of a backup, like you said, you know, emergency fund. So I mentioned kind of at the top of the show that we met in the Cincinnati Rotary Club here. And I sometimes, for fellow Rotarians, talk with them a little bit about their involvement in the club. And so I'm curious, because you've been very active with the group recently. I know you've got a lot of responsibilities with the club right now. What's kind of been the most rewarding aspect of what you do in our club?
So you were right. Thank you for asking that question, Sam. It's been a privilege to serve on the Rotary Club of Cincinnati board here for the last year. I have two more years in my term, and you know, I have the privilege of working with just some of the best people in the club. I'm just delighted. I probably have to pay money by the hour to get time with some of the people who I get a chance to work with on the Rotary board, and we get to do really fun projects. I think one of the ones that I'm particularly close to, and you know, particularly have been enjoying, is one related to increasing Rotary Club participation and in younger sets of people. You know, if we were to look across the Cincinnati Rotary Club, we have an average age of about 60 years old. And that's fairly typical across the country and across the world. But that said, there are Rotary clubs and in high schools, and there are Rotary clubs in colleges, and there are actually young adult Rotary clubs. One of the fun projects we did recently is we opened and started a Rotary club within a club. You know, we have a Rotary club for young professionals that exists as a club within the Cincinnati Rotary Club. You know, they're independent of us. They have their own projects and they're doing their own recruiting efforts, and they're meeting at a frequency that really fits their millennial demographic. And it's just great to see the innovation unleashed in the next generation of Rotarians, right? And some of these folks have come from, you know, University of Cincinnati Rotaract Club. Mm-hmm. And we just had one of our high school interact or Rotary Club members graduate from Indian Hill High School, and now she's going to be joining the University of Cincinnati Rotary Club. So seeing increasing the number of young people that are engaging in service above self has been really inspiring. I guess I have always felt, and I know you and I have talked about this a little bit over the years, that surrounding yourself with people who are looking on the bright side of our community and trying to make Cincinnati better has an infectious appeal, right? It just sort of builds its own optimism into your life. And so it's been a privilege to be able to give back to the board and to be a part of innovation at the service club level. You know, we're trying to find ways to do better by our members and to engage in more projects and have more fun doing it.
Yeah, awesome. And you've done, because you've worked with some of our youth outreach stuff in the past too. I think it was
it was the Rotary Youth Exchange.
Yeah.
Yep. It was one of the ways that the Rotary Club helps to build world peace is by exchanging high school students with countries around the world. And you know, the State Department has carved out a special visa for the Rotary to send and exchange high school students. And I tell you, it's inspiring to hang around with a brave 16-year-old who's just, you know, just a delight, and they are here experiencing the U.S. and learning how stereotypes are completely, you know, incorrect, and learning that, you know, learning to share things about their home country. I remember in particular Oak Hills High School here in Cincinnati exchanged a student to Germany and brought in a student from Turkey, and she had a delightful year. But you can imagine just how many people in Oak Hills High School would have come across a young woman from Turkey if it weren't for the Rotary Youth Exchange. So, probably some of the most inspiring work I get to do, and experience on a personal level.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. It always amazes me how many things that organization and our organization does that, you know, if you want to be involved with managing an exchange program I don't know how many youth we do every year, but there's certainly a handful, right? Yes. All I got to do is join, and you can join the committee. If that's someone's passion and they want to get into that, how do they do it otherwise? You know, how do you get into a program that, again, like you said, the State Department has a special carve out for? Well, come join, you know, that's a great opportunity, I think, for folks who want to get into that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of little niches that people can, do that kind of vocational service. Right. So it's very cool stuff. So maybe just to, summarize and wrap up our interview here. If folks are listening and they've heard a lot of what you've said, maybe you can summarize sort of the three main problems or needs that someone should reach out to you for help with.
Well, thanks, Sam, for that. This has been a really great conversation and a great opportunity. Appreciate you sharing this time with me. You know, WealthQuest, we're a registered investment advisor. You know, investments are, you know, sometimes the center point of our relationship with folks, but they are really just the means to execute, you know, financial independence in many cases, or, you know, just execute what a family wants to achieve. And when, you know, in terms of what kind of problems and concerns, you know, I talked to a family today, as a matter of fact. They called me at 9 in the morning, and they said, "Hey, Steve, I'm calling you from Cork, Ireland, and we work with one of your current clients, and we need some help." And he's approaching 60 years old, and he's thinking about going through a life transition. And so, you know, that's stressing out the family, and they're trying to figure out what they can afford. And I would say life transitions are most often when people reach out to WealthQuest and to my colleagues and to myself. You know, they are at a point where they could use some professional advice. You know, they're, as we mentioned before, we have the privilege we've been lucky enough to experience life through a lot of people's eyes, hundreds and hundreds of clients' lives, and as a result, hundreds of retirements. And so I get to lend a little bit of that experience to this couple from Cork, Ireland. So when a life transition might strike one of your listeners, it could be a job change, it could be a career change, it could be a retirement or a divorce or the birth or a death. You know, those are some of the most common times when we talk to families in transition. But another moment that comes to mind is just a second opinion. Just like if we were friends at the Rotary meeting, you'd say, "Hey, Steve, you know, I got this benefit at work. What do you think I should do?" You know, that's another opportunity when clients and then family of clients tend to call me. And, you know, that is certainly something that we are always happy to do. We are really pride ourselves on sharing information with no obligation, right? Your listeners can reach out to me and not expect me to have to, you know, there's no engagement required to, you know, ask for a second opinion on something. The other idea I'd probably share with your listeners, Sam, is the idea of building out family vision. It's not so much a problem or an issue that families come to us with, but it's something that we've been advocating for our families. And it's, you know, again, akin to, you know, that education, coaching, and psychology, that if we can help a family to identify what's really important, you know, it's not just we want to live a secure, you know, retirement. It actually, when you really peel back the onion, there's a lot more to what that really means. Where are you going to live? How are you going to live? What does your legacy mean? What, you know, more, a bigger pile of money is you know, generally perceived as better, you know, but what's the why? You know, why is it better? And usually, if you help a family to articulate the why, then, you know, we can show them the how. And so I guess I would leave you with, we have a free module on a website called basecamprc.com. Stands for Base Camp Resource Center. But basecamprc.com is a website where you can begin and start and work through a completely free family vision exercise. There's no obligation. There's no pitch. It's just a way of helping families to identify their why.
Very cool. Awesome. No, I think that's definitely, coming up with a plan is half the battle, right?
Yep.
So if folks want to learn more about WealthQuest or reach out to you, what's your contact info?
So you can learn a lot about WealthQuest just from our website. You know, you can Google WealthQuest in Cincinnati, you'd find us. You can also get to us at wqcorp.com. So wqcorp.com. You know, somebody out there is camping on wealthquest.com and will not return my phone call. So far we are wqcorp.com, and you can find a lot of information about WealthQuest there, including access to podcasts and the social media posts and the videos. If they want to reach out to me, they can email me at sking@wqcorp.com. So I would invite your listeners to reach out. Again, I'm all ears and happy to be a sounding board.
Great. Awesome. Well, Steve, thanks so much for being on the show. You know, I think it's interesting. You know, it's people entrust you with so many, some very important things to their lives, and doing that well, I think requires a lot of interesting soft skills. And then while also developing unique marketing and tools within a regulated space, I mean, it's a challenging industry. So, really enjoyed the conversation and kind of learning your approach to it. And yeah, thanks for being on.
Hey, Sam, it was a pleasure. Thank you for sharing the time with me. I look forward to seeing you at our next Rotary meeting.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. And learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.